I'm Matt Katz, in for Tanzina Vega. This is The Takeaway. As COVID-19 continues to spread in the U.S., it's no longer just concentrated in coastal epicenters like New York and Washington State. Emerging hotspots are now popping up in the Midwest and the South, from large metros like Detroit to smaller communities like Clarksdale, Mississippi. Today, we're going to take a look at one place that's becoming an epicenter in the southeastern part of the country. Albany, Georgia is a small city south of Atlanta with a rich civil rights history.
Martin Luther King went there. There were mass marches. Churches played a big role in that movement. Freedom songs came out of there.
Brad Schrade is an investigative reporter with the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. He says Albany is also one of the most impoverished cities in the state.
Its poverty rate is above 30%. It's heavily African-American. About 75% of the city is African-American. And they are right now the hottest spot in Georgia for the coronavirus epidemic. They've been hit very hard.
There have been at least 250 confirmed cases of coronavirus in Daugherty County, where Albany sits, with 23 confirmed deaths so far. And with a population of about 90,000, that means the county has one of the highest concentrations per capita of people known to be infected with COVID-19 in the entire U.S. I spoke with Brad Schrade along with Dr. Allison Chamberlain, an infectious disease epidemiologist at Emory University's Rollins School of Public Health. Here's what Brad told me about how COVID-19 is spreading in Albany, Georgia.
Health officials there trace the rapid spread to two funerals that occurred about a month ago now. One was on February 29th. The other one was about a week later. Both of them were handled by the same funeral home. And after the February 29th funeral, several family members got sick. The funeral itself was not linked to the virus. The person who died did not have coronavirus, but somebody at the funeral did. And Phoebe Putney, the lone hospital in Albany, they said that their first 20 or so patients that came in with the virus were linked to those two funerals. In fact, tragically, the pastor who gave the eulogy at the February 29th funeral, he died of coronavirus about a week ago. Several family members got very sick, and on Friday, one of them actually died from the virus. So these two funerals are sort of these, you know, mass gatherings that you've seen in other parts of the country, that somebody was infected and they it just spreads from there.
Oh, that is just so tragic. And you had said that most of the city is African American. Is that who's been most affected by this outbreak so far?
Yes, both of those funerals were the funeral home that handled them were, you know, a historically black funeral home, and most of the people that attended those were African Americans. The large portion of the confirmed cases there have been, and confirmed deaths have been, African American. Now, the other thing about this is it's not just Albany. This is a rural area, and several counties surrounding Albany, you know, people come into Albany. I mean, that's where they go to shop. So those counties have also been hit pretty hard relative to their populations. The mayor of Albany has placed some tight restrictions trying to get people to stay at home, and businesses are pretty much shut down there. And he has said, look, this is not an Albany problem. This is a Southwest Georgia problem, because, you know, if these other counties aren't abiding by the same restrictions, it doesn't do a lot of good. So they're really struggling to just get a handle on this. The hospital itself has been inundated. Their entire ICU wings have been full since the middle of last week. They're having to open up sort of an adjunct ICU unit at a nearby facility that wasn't really being used a lot. The governor has sent down two or three medical teams from the National Guard to help out. They are really trying to get a handle on this, but as in most cases, this is just overwhelming their health system.
Dr. Chamberlain, are you able to give a sense of how the spread of the virus in rural Georgia compares to other hotspots like New York City?
What's interesting is that sort of historically, for, you know, public health preparedness efforts, and funding, we focused a lot on the urban centers and making sure that we can plan for and address outbreaks like this, pandemics like this, in the settings that we think would be the most problematic in terms of high density populations, things like that, where we focused a lot of attention on those urban settings like New York, like Atlanta, like Chicago, LA. They've received additional funding, over and above funding that other locales receive to ensure that they're up to speed and their systems can withstand something like this. And I think that the disease, like as we know, doesn't discriminate in terms of who it infects. And I think that what we're observing with Albany in particular is that this pandemic can really affect all localities, not just the urban centers, that it can affect the small towns like this just as badly, if not worse, especially given the underlying sort of baseline healthcare and public health infrastructure in these locales that are just not as robust and not able to sort of take on the burden that can come when a lot of people get sick all at once. I also think it's sort of interesting to sort of note and think about how, a small town operates. And when a situation like this arises where someone who, is well-loved in the community passes away, those big life events get a lot of participation from a close-knit community like someplace like Albany. And that's where we've seen that can have really bad ramifications in a time like this. And, social distancing for an urban city might be a lot different from social distancing in a small setting where, a quote mass gathering for Albany might be a funeral, whereas a mass gathering for some place like Atlanta might be a Super Bowl.
Dr. Chamberlain, can you give us a sense of the state of public health in rural Georgia, Albany, and even statewide before the outbreak so we understand what might be playing out now?
Georgia is divided into 18 health districts, and that has to do with the way that Georgia's population is sort of divided. The more centralized population dense areas like Atlanta have health districts that might be just one county each. For instance, Fulton County is its own health district, and that's where the majority of city of Atlanta is. But for a health district like in Southwest Georgia, where Albany is, there are 14 counties within this health district, and there's limited staff that, oversee a health district in this more rural area. And there's a lot of geography that these particular individuals who work in health departments have to kind of oversee and be in charge of promoting health programs like STD testing or, community outreach regarding other sort of behavioral interventions, diabetes care, things like that. They're stretched, especially in these more rural areas where, they can't touch everybody. They can't be, as close proximity to a lot of their constituents and the people that they're serving as readily as they can in a more urban area. Across the nation, we've seen sort of an atrophying of our public health system where we're just not as well funded as we once were to be able to provide the staff and the services that are needed, even on a daily basis.
Brad, Georgia Governor Brian Kemp has so far resisted a shelter-in-place order, the kind of order that we've seen elsewhere in the country. What has the state government done to address coronavirus in Albany and in rural Georgia overall?
Well, it's been left up to local officials largely to set the kind of community standards. I mean, the schools have been closed statewide, but the local officials set these parameters of, non-essential businesses, et cetera. The governor has sent down the National Guard. The state has sent in extra ventilators. They're just trying to hold it together and anticipating more cases coming in.
Dr. Chamberlain, is that the best practice? Is a city by city or county by county approach effective during a pandemic like this, or should things really be managed on the state level?
We don't have a lot of precedent to go by with a situation like this. We've been through a lot of different, global health emergencies and pandemics, but we've never reached this particular point in which we've had to really enact some of the social distancing elements that we've always sort of theoretically talked about having to implement. And so I think we're kind of learning as we go here. We have learned from other countries that the countries that have been able to implement this sort of more draconian social distancing measures early on in their phase of the pandemic really makes a difference. And we're a different country. We have our sort of, our liberties that we like to maintain for as long as possible. And when we talk about very broad social distancing, you know, measures that impact our social liberties, it gets really difficult. I think there's sort of different approaches that we've attempted to take, like we're talking about, as far as, you know, having localities attempt to do it themselves. But when the localities have holes, when we're dealing sort of not with a bowl, but with a colander, it's really hard because so many people are interconnected. And these, you know, small town A that might, you know, introduce shelter in place measures, when they're next to another town that doesn't do the same thing, and those people from that town are coming into the town that has the shelter in place, you can see where the problems arise. And with a disease like this that's spreading so rapidly and that most people are susceptible to, and we don't have a cure, that is a problem. And I think that it's kind of one week at a time, unfortunately, what we're dealing with, if we didn't put the very strict, you know, measures in place at the highest levels in the beginning.
For example, a week ago, public officials in Albany were holding daily press briefings and public information meetings on Facebook Live. And there was a commission chairman from a neighboring county that came in to talk one of the days. People were having church services in these communities a week ago. They were still having large cookouts. And so public officials in Southwest Georgia are struggling to try to communicate the seriousness of the virus and the outbreak and really trying to get the word out. But church is a huge deal down there. It's the part of the fabric of the community. And so they're really having to try to communicate as well as they can that of the seriousness of this situation.
Dr. Chamberlain, before I let you go, should other rural communities around the country look to Albany and maybe take a more stringent approach when it comes to social distancing rules? I mean, is this one of the lessons that other places should take from this whole experience in Georgia?
Yes, I believe so. I think they absolutely should. Behavioral change is hard, and that's what we're talking about, is changing our behavior to stem this epidemic wherever it is happening. And I absolutely think that other small towns should look to places like Albany and say, this can happen here. What can I do as an elected official or a leader of my church or a leader of another sort of social organization to make sure that my, you know, members understand the gravity of what's going on, and that, you know, being out and about right now can really be problematic because you cannot predict, you cannot know where everybody in your small town has been recently, who they've been in contact with, who the folks with, you know, that those folks have been in contact with. And it can be just as devastating in a small town as it can be in a city.
Dr. Allison Chamberlain is an infectious disease epidemiologist at Emory University's Rollins School of Public Health. And Brad Schrade is an investigative reporter with the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Thanks to you both for joining us.
Thank you.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.